Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting in the planet. Enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source, a spiritual guidebook for navigating life's journey. You're listening to Life Conversations Radio.
Life Conversations is dedicated to empowering its listeners spiritually, emotionally, socially, and financially. The radio show provides the platform for the stimulation of thoughts, conversations, and ways of being that allow listeners to explore and examine what it is they believe and decide whether what they believe is keeping them stuck and disempowered or empowering them to live their best life.
Compare with your imagination. Living there, you'll be. Welcome to the Play Experience. What they meant to say at the end of that was life is golden dream. But a dream, it got moved out the way. That was DeLille and Dakari, the infamous dynamic duo. And before that you heard Yellow Bird from the movie The Sapphires. And at the top, you heard Pure Imagination, my good friend Joyce Gorillaz. You can find his wonderful music on E, theisinvictorzonemusic.com. Pure Imagination, where he talks about if you want to change the world, there's nothing to it. Nothing to it but doing it. Being it. Being the change you want to see. For real, for real, for real. I am Umbasa Bofira, and I'm one. It's all truth. All truth. All truth, all beauty, all justice, and all love. Thank you for joining me this moment and every other moment you decided to play on this playground of life. So enamored with it. In all of its roller coaster ride. When we talk about play, we talk about passionately loving, appreciating ourselves. And as I travel and do the play and heal experience, I'm finding that as we dig, as we move that love shovel into unearth the treasures, sometimes we can encounter the feeling of pain. We can feel the sorrow, the grief, the shame, the guilt. It's unmistakable, it's undeniable, and it cannot be ignored. It's time to recognize, it's time to take our heads out of that proverbial sand. Just keep digging, because all that you find is always going to be a shining treasure in its own glorious way. I'm just going to take my time, because it's what we have. We can feel like it's collapsing. We can feel like it's speeding up or slowing down. But we do have it. And for this, I am grateful. I had such a beautiful, glorious, adventurous moment in time in Australia for over a month. It was just glorious. Beautiful friends. Ones I knew before. Never saw them before, but I knew them. Beautiful people. My sister Sarazai. My sister Deb. Leonie. And of course, I got the pleasure to meet some wonderful elders, now elders, called the Sapphires. Beverly Briggs, her cousin Laurel Williams, and her sister Naomi. I didn't actually get to talk to Naomi, but I did feel her, because Laurel was the spokesperson in a big way. She spoke for everyone in the group, and it was beautiful. It was a wonderful interaction, sharing. And I got to not only hear about their lives, but I got to experience my own through them. And through the experience of the Aboriginal people. And for this, I am forever grateful. It unearthed some things in me that I hadn't seen since I had a glimpse of them. At the moment that I first felt them, but then they went under the earth. of Mombasa cells and Mombasa genes. And they were buried. And so I am very thankful today, this moment, that I got a chance to bring some things up into the light. And this is what I would like to shift into truth this moment about the idea that if you're going to really passionately love and appreciate you, if you're going to really play and heal, the games, the fun, the joy, the laughter can all bring you to the truth that's right there within you. We anesthetize ourselves. We take that proverbial anesthesia in so many different ways. Hiding our heads away from a certain truth. It could be anything at any given moment. And it's all addiction. Everybody's addicted to something. What is yours? If you're willing, you can actually look it squarely in the eyes, recognize it, and allow it to be released. For this is the only way that we'll find ourselves shifting into the truth of who we really are. I had the experience of listening to this story, the Sapphires, Beverly Briggs, and Laurel Williams. I got to hear about the energy of liberation, sovereignty, freedom, that they're still right in this moment, deeply entrenched in searching for, in a place where from the outside looks like it's everything is happening, it's all of that. And of course, in the United States, we here deal with our own situation such as the same. If we take that and look at it as a patch in the quilt, what they're dealing with there, and place it over, just put it over our patch, it's kind of sort of going to fit and look like the same. Players different. Situations, the way things happen different, but the feelings, the pain, the guilt, the shame, all the same. It all starts with us, our own thinking, our own feeling, and our own being. What we decide, who we decide we're going to be. Whether we're going to shift into the truth or we're going to keep our heads buried in the sand deeply. Is it time? I say yes. I say yes. I got to ask the Sapphires in the conversation, who are the Aboriginals? I want you to take a listen to what they had to say.
Well, the first people here before the white man came.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, they were frightened of them, and because I'd never seen white people before.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, some of them got killed, some of them got shot straight away. If they put up a fight,
mm-hmm.
if they just stood back and let Captain...
Yeah.
If you know the history of Australia, Captain Cook came in there.
In the head,
through the head.
Uh-huh.
That's why we always say, oh, you people go our country away to Captain Cook. Well, I'm from a big, large family.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even half of my family's not even there. I'm looking at it, so why isn't my family there? Well, that's our grandma here. She's our core person of our story, our history, this lady here.
Mm-hmm.
She lost... The government came, and if you see the movie,
okay.
They came and took her children
okay.
away.
Girls?
The girls.
Mm.
And on this exact place, that's our reserve there.
And they came and took them from there?
Yeah. She was working
mm-hmm.
For some white people.
Mm-hmm.
When they said, quick, the government's here, you know, they're here to take the kids away. And she ran screaming, and they were taking them away. And she said, "Don't take my children." And he said, "Oh, you better not give us any trouble," because she thought he had a gun. He had a gun. So a lot of them were too frightened to do anything.
Mm.
And she just followed the. She said, "Well, can I follow the thing to the station? They're going to put them."
Mm-hmm.
Sent them to Cootamundra Girls Home,
mm-hmm.
which is it's a long story.
No.
But anyway, she said, "Can I come to the station?" And she watched them go,
mm-hmm.
and then on the way back, she just collapsed. She's walking back. It's a long, long, long walk.
45 k's, 45 miles.
And she just fell in the grass and just collapsed. Anyway, my people thought nothing of just going to sleep in the grass,
mm-hmm.
if they were tired and that. But anyway, they said that horse and cart, this is horse and cart days,
mm-hmm.
we'll go and look for her. And they going along looking for her, and they could hear a noise, and it was her, sort of, mm-hmm. she was crying, she couldn't cry anymore.
Right.
And they found her there in the grass. And she went, after that, the girls were in Cootamundra homes,
mm-hmm.
after that, she went around looking for them for years till they got home. So it was about 15, 16. Her mother was too young to take.
Hmm.
So she was in hospital. Right?
Okay.
She was in hospital.
Our mothers were sisters.
Yes.
And fathers
and brothers.
Okay.
So we're close.
She was in hospital. They were told to take her out of the hospital, which they did,
mm-hmm.
took her out the back way, and
mm-hmm.
The police pulled up to get her, but she was already gone,
mm-hmm.
and being hidden in the long grass by our auntie.
Mm-hmm.
And then when someone ran and told our grandmother, and like they've said, she ran up to see them, and they told her to stay away, and she watched the police drive off with her daughters.
Mm-hmm.
So then someone took her into was it not the Moama, the train.
Train
is at Moama where they put the girls on, and she watched them just as they were pulling out, and she just broke her heart.
Mm-hmm. And that was one of them. Was your mother?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was her name?
Two older sisters, Evelyn, my mum.
And
Evelyn.
She was one of the ones they took.
Yeah.
And yours didn't get taken.
No,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, she's sort of taken on a lot of role of being a girl and been very strong all her life. And as she gets older, she gets stronger. Her history has been helping people ever since she was young.
I like helping.
And in the way of theatre, like we fool around playing, and she always took on the role of organising things and, you know, in the backyard and charging people money, kids money to come and see our little performance.
Yeah, on the back of the truck.
And as she got older, she took on the role here,
mm-hmm.
Helping people all the time, and regardless if they can't get help, she'll go and get them help.
Sure.
Yeah, and be defiant against the,
administration,
whereas she'll go in and do it anyway.
Okay.
That was Laurel. That was Laurel Robinson, and she was sharing with us about the stolen generation, that period of time. And if you don't know anything about the history of, which a lot of people don't, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this series of shows about this, is because most people do not know. And I was one that was a little guilty about that as well. So be, if I'm going to be guilty, and I choose not to be, I was one of the ones who just was ignorant of the situation. And I'll put it that blunt way. There was this wonderful man, I'm going to call him, named Lieutenant. When I did my research, it said Lieutenant Cook. And he came and claimed the land of this island of this continent, island continent of Australia, to be no man's land. And, you know, it is said that he was sent by the King of England and was told to, if it was no one claiming it, to claim the land, and if there was natives there, to ask permission, which is really interesting. And he decided to say, to tell everyone, the colonists that were coming with him or after him, that there was no one there. And when there was lots, of course, different, it was like maybe, 400 different nations there at the time of Aboriginal people. So after, you know, that episode, they came in just briefly. I'm going to go through it briefly. They came in and within, a very short period of time, a lot of the Aboriginal people dealt with a lot of disease and devastation and viruses that they had never experienced before, because they were people who actually were close to the land and dealt with the land. And so that happened in that particular time, where they the people took the Aboriginal women as their own, and there was a lot of slavery type of atmosphere there. What Laurel Robinson, I beg to differ, I was calling her Williams, I have to fess up on that with the truth. Her name is Laurel Robinson, and she was talking about her grandmother, and her and Beverly are cousins, and their grandmother, her three of her girls were taken, their aunts, and how, and this is why it's so touching to me, is because it's so, it's so present, you know. It's like when you talk about your grandmother and your aunts, you know, it's like, wow. If I thought about right now, my aunts, if that happening, what would I be like? What would I feel like? You know, so it brings it so present for me. And so that generation that they call them the stolen generation, because they came into the missions where they all lived. They grew up on missions, and you had to have permission to go off and come on the mission. And they came on the mission and took the children to, quote unquote, educate them better and take good care of them, but a lot of atrocities happened. So one of them actually took poison, and she was talking about that and how she killed herself. And of course, their grandmother was heartbroken, and she passed and crossed over. But, you know, it's really a touching, and it brings you – I had a tough time just pulling this together, you know, the research and just the energy that was coming up for me, the research in digging in that archaeological energy of the Aboriginals. It brought up a lot for me, you know, within myself. And it started there, you know, when I talked to one person about the Aboriginals, and it just hit me that, you know, it was something coming up for me. And, you know, all over the world, things are happening. Things are happening to people all over the world, you know, like this, you know. And as I say, if you put that fabric over another fabric, it'll kind of sort of fit, you know. And it's like, wow, it's almost like the same fabric. And this is a playground where we can choose to look at it all now, but all spread it all out in front of us and decide what it is that we're going to keep and what it is that we're not going to keep, you know, because it's all very real. And in order for us to heal, we have to deal with it all. There's no way around it. And it does start within. And my particular journey of it is dealing with how I choose, how I decide that I'm going to move after bringing up and unearthing. I can't go backwards. That's virtually impossible for me at this point. Understanding that there are so many people in this world that are dealing with the same type of memories, the same kind of pain, the same kind of suffering. How are we going to decide that we're going to passionately, compassionately love and appreciate ourselves, to bring ourselves around to a place where it's when you think about the wars that are going on now, when you think about even the time that Beverly Briggs and Laura Robertson were growing up, I look back at how it was in the 60s. Now, when they were going through all the racism, the things that, you know, Laura was talking about, racism and her first experience with racism. Matter of fact, let me just let you listen to that. Let me take a listen to this.
We're not violent people,
mm-hmm.
But we are now.
Yeah.
Now stand up for our rights, but back then they were. It's always been a.
What do you call it? What did I say before? Not
very violent or
passive. More passive.
Always, my people are passive people.
Humble, yes. Full of humility, yes. Surrendering.
Like even nowadays, the young ones will all say at one time or other, oh, shame, no, I'm not going to do that, you know. I don't like to be out in the spotlight,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, don't like to cry, so it's still a lot of humility,
yes.
Even though you know you need to speak up at
yes.
times now.
Yes.
Sometimes nature just has a way of balancing us out, you know, by way of the lions and tigers and bears on the air, which they're not really the problem. It's the people who act like those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are not made to be lions and tigers and bears.
And we've taken part in many, many demonstrations,
mm-hmm.
back in the day.
Yeah.
With marches and going to conferences and starting up all the supporting the startup of a lot of the women's groups,
mm-hmm.
and whatever it was. We started off down in Melbourne,
mm-hmm.
and then moved up to Sydney later on. But
mm-hmm.
At the time, down in Melbourne, we would lead the marches and everything.
You would lead the marches?
We'd lead the marches, yes.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's really rich, because when I think about the time era when you were growing up, was when you were 14, 15, 16, what was that time era? Was that like 1968? Was it
60s.
So the 60s
65.
Just keeps coming up, because I was speaking with someone who grew up, he was born in 49, and he grew up, or 48, and he grew up during the time, he was at the first sit-in in New York,
yes.
or whatever
yes.
that was, because of the school he went to, and he saw a lot of the things that you are talking about right now.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it, that period of time, there was a lot of musicians that were speaking out through
mm-hmm.
their music, really, really candidly, but also subtly.
Yeah.
And the era of time was so powerful in that it did, no matter what we know today, it did shift some things based on the fact that people stand up. It was a standing up for your rights time.
That's right.
In South Africa, it was so many different places that so much atrocity was happening, you know, on the planet itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with original people. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It was with original people. And I think that the stories are so intertwined. And when we start beginning to, and like I said, just last week, we were talking about that on the show. And, you know, just to be here talking about this, and it's about the awakening. It's something about the awakening. Because you were also involved, how were you involved with the Vietnam War? Speaking about...
Laurel, we started off as a singing group. We started off as... we've sang all our lives, because back in the day, we didn't have money to provide for families as they do, like, from government assistance. They had nothing. And so they put on concerts and stuff, and that old truck in that picture.
Mm-hmm. The sapphire.
They're on the truck.
This truck here.
That's it in the movie.
Oh, okay.
And that's my dad there.
And this truck here.
The
truck is in the movie?
Yeah. Not the particular one, but...
Right, but it is. Yeah.
One truck.
Okay.
It's similar to that. But these two, Dad used to borrow a bus from the local car yard, his friend. Excuse me, my throat's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go around to the farmers and do concerts. Rehearsal was always at my parents' place. Rehearsing, and my grandmother, Beverly's mother, and my mother would work on costumes, sewing by hand, getting cheap material. My dad would hammer pennies onto the bottom of the shoes for tap dancing.
Yeah.
Because we had a variety sort of show.
Right.
And that's how they would raise money for the local... Well, mainly for the family.
Mainly for the family.
Maybe for the families there in Shepparton.
All the families, not just your family.
No.
But, yeah.
All the other original families.
Mm. So when you started out at the Sapphires,
we were singing there, and as we got older, I went to live with Bev.
Okay.
Again.
We were always singing together, harmonizing, and the best ones were Naomi, Beverly, and I. When I say best ones, the harmony was
better. You can say that.
I don't want to say
that. Oh, no. It's just what it is. Yeah. It's like, okay, we're at a point in this time where we have to say what it is and be
what happened.
Is that, you know? But you were starting out, you started out singing to assist the family, not just your family, but other families.
Well, we were little then. We were really small.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we got older, I was only 16, we were singing in a club. Now, we came home from late shift, walking past this club, and these guys pulled up and said, "Hey, girls," they were Maori.
Mm-hmm.
From New Zealand.
And I was a musician.
Sort of recognised one another. We knew some of them.
And Cook had been to their land by that time, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's been all everywhere.
All around the place. And then what happened? They asked if we could have a hula dancer.
Mm.
My sister was a hula dancer.
Okay.
So we fixed up.
Is that Lois?
Margaret. She passed away last year.
Okay.
But she was going to go around and do the, what do you call it?
Rehearsal.
I just
wanted
to
have a look,
see how she did.
Okay.
She was a beautiful dancer.
Right.
Yeah, she was.
But she didn't turn up.
She couldn't
get out of bed.
She's tired from
dancing. We went around to tell them as we were on our way to the market, to get our cheap veggies and stuff. And they asked if we sang. We said, oh, a little bit, we sang.
Mm-hmm.
We sang and harmonised, and he just loved it, the leader of the band.
Mm-hmm.
So we sang there on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night.
Saturday.
And we must say we did very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And we were only getting
£3.
$6, I'd say.
Yeah.
Pound,
£6. Yeah. We're only kids, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like I always say, my mum and dad especially my dad, had found out that I was in a club. He would have really gone off.
Okay, I thought they both were supportive. It was the mom that kind of kept it.
But she didn't know.
She didn't know you were singing either?
No, not in a club.
Not in a club?
No.
Oh.
nightclub. Back in those days.
Oh, that was the taboo.
Yeah, but it was quiet. It was, when you think of it, it was a boring club, wasn't it?
Well, there was no alcohol.
Oh, yeah, it was quite boring.
We had to bring it in a little case.
Oh my goodness. I brought it in a makeup case.
I said, I'm nervous, I can't sing, I have to have a drink.
Yeah, so they poured out a drink for it. I didn't drink.
You didn't need it, you were cut pretty carefully.
6 days.
But then we were asked to go to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And they said no. Amy said, no, I'm not going, I'm against the war. That's when the war broke out.
Mm-hmm.
So Bev wasn't going because of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Scared.
We were in all the
marches, demonstrations against the
no war. We didn't want our soldiers to go to the Vietnam.
So then I went about 12 months later. I went with my sister.
How was that?
It was fantastic. It was really good. I mean, when I think of it, I was in. It was an experience that I'll never forget.
Right.
And every now and again, little things pop up in my mind, memory of. You know, going to this place, going to that place. When we got there, we lived in a villa. We were looked after by a Vietnamese family.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big three floors of band members and stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd lock the big gates at night and keep us safe. But we also had, when we were travelling to the American bases,
mm-hmm.
we had security. Security guard, personal mm-hmm. security guard, mm-hmm. which was really something. We thought we were,
big stars, of course you were. I mean, for them, because you know when you think about what everybody didn't, no one that I know of really wanted the war. I remember, you know, when I was in Philadelphia and the people were, you know, the guys, you know, they were just going off one by one, you know, like all of them. And they were like my brother's age, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going off and it was, you know, it was kind of like it was a tension, a big tension about it. So those guys that we all know and love, you know, they were just being drafted.
Yes.
Yeah? So when you think about your service, that was a very divine service, because that's why you felt so good. It's because not only were you being taken care of well, as you should have been, you were taking good care of the hearts of those people.
Yes.
And you were doing what you loved, and they got it.
Yes.
You know, they got it. So every time you perform, you got enlivened even more about it. So it's a blessing, isn't it?
It is. And when you think of that, never went home, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They did
maybe
get something.
They enjoyed.
That's right.
Back you out too. Into the jungle. I saw them come in and go back
my
into
goodness.
The jungle.
That must have been really a challenge because the fear of someone that never shot anybody before, seeing all of this, and they know that this doesn't make any sense because they're getting the word around them of why they're even here.
Yeah.
Mm.
And they were just
so young. They were so young, and so, we just blessed their souls today. This is, I can only imagine that must have been, in its own way, rewarding. It's almost like here, right where you are. You are in a medical service. You are still servicing, you know, and healing. You're still doing it.
Yes.
You know? You, on the other hand, when you had to do what you did because your point of view was really important as well.
Hmm.
You know? And being able to say, this is what I am standing and walking with.
Hmm.
This is what I'm saying about this that's not right.
Yeah.
Somebody, and it's funny that you two were like two peas in a pod. You did that part, and you did that part, and it was all divine part.
It was funny, it started off with my son asked me, Mum, you never, just now and again I hear a bit of Vietnam. He said, you never talk about it. I said, what's there to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, just tell me a little bit, because he was an actor, he's a
writer.
It,
mm-hmm. Okay.
And he said, just tell me a little bit. And so I started talking about it,
mm-hmm.
and he run with it. He said, do you mind if I write about it? And I said, no, there's nothing much to tell, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And every now and again he'd ring me and ask me a few things, or he'd ring Beverly and ask if she got photos or you know, a bit of the history of growing up.
Yeah.
And the others are all open to his questions.
Yeah.
Like Naomi and Lois. And then he said, well, I'm gonna write this story, you know, and I said, oh, and I started getting nervous. So it opened as a play in Melbourne.
That's what I wanted to ask you about.
Play.
And is it still going?
No. No, it's opened nine year ago it opened in Melbourne.
Wow.
Oh,
I
would
love to visit.
Carlin's Nine there.
Who has the rights for that play?
They sold the rights to, what's that? That big movie director Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah. Okay, so once they took it for the movie, it can't be done as a play anymore.
Well, and they put it the way they wanted to put it.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to ask you about.
You
how
a lot of things. In
okay, that. So, because they were just talking about you were trained by your manager to get in touch with Soul Music. Is that true?
No.
Okay.
And
was there a real manager? Was there a man? Did
not
you have
really.
A manager?
No.
You never had a manager?
Just the group from the band.
Oh, yeah, they just kind of helped in directing.
They had the bookings, and he played the drums.
Right.
They were Maori boys.
Okay, so they kind of handled that. They were all management team.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did you really discover R&B and soul music then? And what does it mean to you?
That went right back to when I was just... our uncle had a church, and he used to bring, that was when the White Australian Policy was here in Australia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whenever any black entertainers would come, he'd invite like the likes of Harry Belafonte, who else was there?
Paul Robeson come there, and
quite a few.
There was an opera singer.
Really?
Black opera
Winifred Apple, and
felt comfortable with us because we were just...
So he'd contact them and bring them to the church.
Yeah.
Wow.
They were homesick too.
We would have fellowship with them, as they call it. And then we met up with the Navy. American Navy would come in or so.
That's where we learned our music.
That's where we got the music.
That's
from.
Where you learned the music.
Yeah.
So they would bring. How did that happen?
Well, we met these black people.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we talk.
That's fine.
A black lady, and she said she met my sister. I don't know, on the bus or something, and she said...
He was in the Navy?
No.
She
lived here.
Okay.
She was African, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, come over to my place, we're having a party.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be some American guys there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we said, oh, we'll go over. But she didn't like that. The guys around the town at the time anyway.
Mm-hmm. new people would be fine, new men.
Well, when we got there, we could hear the music going.
Oh, wow.
She had all those
songs. All the songs. Is that the Supreme? All the songs Motown?
Yeah.
Okay.
Motown.
It was before Motown, like Sam Cooke. Sam Cooke. What about what's his name?
James Brown.
James Brown.
Genius.
What's this guy's name? Denali Cole's father.
Oh, Nat King Cole. Cole.
Yeah. Okay.
But the music was fantastic.
Yeah.
And
Annette Arisa came out.
Yeah.
Then they
showed
us how to dance.
Oh, they told you how to dance?
When we used to dance to, Master Taz,
it was that, but it was something else. So.
Okay,
I'll think of it.
Let me see, the Master Taters,
I can see Tina Turner was another one.
The Jerk was out.
The Skate.
We could still do it.
Until James Brown came out with the Camel Walk.
What did Elma used to always do for Elma?
Oh, she'd stand like that.
Yeah, real stiff
and
walk sideways.
Oh,
She's passed away too.
Okay, that's your cousin?
No, just the friend. The daughter of this friend they met.
Person and these people, and we every time the ship came in, we'd run down there.
That's the Navy.
Yeah, and we went out to buy all the records, and that's how we learned our music.
That's how you learned your music.
And when we'd go to a party or they'd go, everyone would be stuck together.
We'd be too frightened. You know?
Right. You had to stay together.
Yeah, we had to stay together. So we were pretty good girls.
Yeah. I look at your pictures and I can see that. You know, I don't think you were trying to trick anybody.
Not that that was very nice boys, you know, guys.
Yeah, they were. They treated
very
you well.
Nice, very
yeah,
good.
Very
good.
Yeah.
What's
you have a photo
You're listening to Life Conversations Radio, and this is the Play Experience with your host, Ombasa Sofira. And you were just listening to Laurel Robinson and Beverly Briggs, and that was not Laurel's clip about racism, but it was telling you a little bit about their experience, which I found so fascinating, how they were actually in the era and the times period that I was speaking about, the 1968, when all the movements around the world were really happening. They were in the midst of that. And how Laurel, her standpoint of, I'm going to go to the war and I'm going to service the servicemen, and Beverly's standpoint was, I'm standing with all of these people and we're fighting against them going, and then I'm going to go? No, that's not going to happen. And how divine it was that both of them, even in their different standpoints, they were back to back and holding the space and really loving and appreciating and caring for people. And right now I'm going to bring on my videographer, who was there with me at the interview, and her name is Sarazai, and she is the wonderful hostess with the mostest that actually put on all the Play and Heal events that I facilitated over there in Australia. And she's right here. How are you, Sarazai?
Oh, goodness. I am good. It's winter here, so I'm freezing a little bit.
Well, we have just the opposite, hot and humid, hot, I tell you. Well, we have a couple of minutes, and I wanted to wrap up with you because you were there and you got the experience, and you got the experience of what we're going to talk a little more about next week, which is the experience of the embassy tent. And I wanted just to get you, just for now, because we're going to bring you back next week, but I wanted you to just share a little bit about, as an Australian resident, and I know you're from Zimbabwe, what is your feel about, you know, the energy around the Aboriginal people? How do you see that they're seen at this time?
Yeah, it seems very interesting because before you came here, I mean, I had a lot of interaction, not a lot, but doing my counseling, I was posted to do my experience with the art therapy, which was done by the Aborigines, and that's where...
Sorry, you're cutting up for some reason. I don't know why your phone keeps breaking off, but we're going to try to hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. It just keeps going in and out. But go ahead and keep talking.
Okay. So I didn't know much about them until when you came. It was an eye-opening because I got to learn what I didn't know. And what I have experienced at the time is the love for each other and helping each other, the spirit of belonging, the loyalty that they have, and keeping their tradition, especially like what you talked about, talk about next week, which I'm not going to go into details, about the tent embassy. They've got a bold sovereignty. That means a lot. Whoever is passing by would want to know what's going on. So I think the Aborigines have got a spirit that's so strong and so powerful. And as few as they are communities, but you can feel their presence because mm-hmm. they try to be heard. Mm-hmm. You can find them in the street corners singing, dancing, showing people their tradition, and they are not shy to show who they are. With very strong components that they have. I am touched by their love because they love each other, they love their community, their country, and they give so much to the country and so much to the communities where they live, and they try to look after each other, which is one of the things that is dying. And they try to heal things together. What the lady in the, now I can't find the names right now.
That's okay.
Yes, the lady was talking about, you know, they stuck together for each other. Mm-hmm. They did things together. And that brought a lot of healing to them what other people would have said, you know, through this, you're going through that. But that one and that was healing for them.
Thank you. Thank you.
So
that
I find it, you do playing, it just blends so, so well. Mm-hmm. Because that's exactly what they are searching for in their lives and in their community.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that, Sarazai. And we're going to be speaking to you again next week. But I just wanted to bring you on just to bring you in. But we're going to go out with the didgeridoo. I love you and I bless you, and I will see you next week, okay?
Thank you very much. Love you, too.
All right. Thanks for coming on the playground. Thanks. All right. So we're going to go out with the didgeridoo. I am so thankful that you decided to come on the playground and play with us today. And I want to say a special shout-out to Celeste because Celeste is such a beautiful creature. I love, love, love you, Celeste, for even prompting me to look for the sapphires, because you don't know, my sister, what you opened up. You opened up a play and heal adventure to remember. So I'm giving you a big hug and letting you sink into these didgeridoo right now. I love you. And so I will see you all next week with Bells On. Ombasa out. See you later.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.